Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Cindy Solomon from the Global Product Management Talk. Hi, Jason. How are you?
I'm well, Cindy. How are you doing?
Nick Koster, who is in Australia, and he will be co-hosting with me today for most of the event.
Hello there.
Hi, Nick.
Hey, guys. How are you?
I have in the room with us Jason Hardy-Smith.
Nice to meet you.
You too.
And also Stephanie Mainwaring.
Hi, Nick.
Hey, Steph. How you doing?
We're discussing serious matters in a lighthearted way. This is meant to be a casual discussion of people as if we were together having a drink, if that's possible.
Super.
Please have a bar. Okay.
I hope I'm coming through clear, Cindy, because I'm about 50 metres away from a university bar and a cafeteria at a place I'm working at the moment. So hopefully the background noise isn't too bad.
So why don't we give our exact locations, Nick, since you're probably the farthest away from us.
Okay. Well, I'm currently tweeting and chatting from Macquarie University in Sydney, Australia. I come from a business called BrainMate, who provide product management consulting and training services.
Excellent.
I'm Jason Hardy-Smith. I'm Vice President of Product Management at Bright Idea Corporation. We are chatting with you from the Financial District in San Francisco.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Mainwaring. Yeah, we're on the 25th floor, actually, of a nice building in San Francisco, so we have a great view. It's not too foggy.
Excellent. And this is Cindy F. Solomon. I have to use my middle initial to distinguish me from the other Bay Area Cindy Solomon, who is a well-known thought leader on customer service issues. I am across the bay from San Francisco in Albany next to Berkeley. We have much nicer weather than San Francisco has on a regular basis, I must say.
Well, that wouldn't be hard, Cindy.
Out my window is a nice bright sky, but I did spend the day on Saturday in San Francisco for the first Product Camp San Francisco that was held at NineJet. In case you don't know, a Product Camp is an unconference where product managers, people interested in product management, people who deal with products, get together and decide on the day of or just briefly previous to the day what topics we'll be discussing, who will be presenting. It's an excellent opportunity to share knowledge. This talk takes place on Twitter at hashtag ProDMGMTTALK. Welcome to Kamel Tahir, Janelle Noble. We will be tweeting questions that Jason prepared for us to discuss on his subject matter, which as well as after the event, we edit the audio portion into a podcast so people can listen to it on demand. And we will take the transcript of the tweet and make that available as well. I am tweeting using this tool called Joint IM. It's at joint.im/channel/productmanagementtalk. I like this tool for the Twitter talks. Every week I have a new tool that I've discovered and I'm trying out. But this tool holds the tweets in between events. So I'm very pleased about that because Twitter search will search for the hashtag, but it doesn't hold it over time.
Cool. And I'll be doing this entirely through my iPad today. It's the only thing I can get a Wi-Fi connection on, so we'll see how we go with that.
Excellent. Put together a package of links, the background material that you provided.
I was going to say, Jason, I'm really excited about the topic today. Innovation and product management, something that we're really passionate about at BrainMate, are always working with our clients to try and come up with new innovative ways of doing things. So it's really going to be interesting to talk about this with you today.
Excellent. Good. Yeah, I'm really excited about it too. It's obviously something that's very near and dear to our hearts. Pretty much whole business here, so that's what we live and breathe every day. It's also great for a product manager to be involved in this kind of product as well. I think like all the different products I've been involved in, this is probably the one that's been closest to my actual job, the three things I'm to work on.
Not only trying to build innovative products, but we're also trying to build products that help other companies be more innovative. So
Today's Global Product Management Talk is on building innovative products. Cindy Solomon, I am delighted to introduce Jason Hardy-Smith, who's Vice President of Product Management at Bright Idea. He will be discussing best practices for sourcing new product ideas and managing innovation. Jason Hardy-Smith is Vice President of Product Management for Bright Idea. He's an expert in the development lifecycle of on-demand enterprise software. Jason brings over 15 years of expertise and vision to the Bright Idea product team. He has spent over 10 years at Oracle developing and bringing key global applications to market, including the Oracle Project Management and Oracle SFA suite. Prior to joining Bright Idea, Jason has led the design and product management for several successful first-to-market software-as-a-service products, including Blue Road's channel-focused lead referral management. He is a leader, a visionary, and a technology expert, and he drives user experience, product roadmap, and product marketing of the Bright Idea Suite. Jason holds an honors degree in electronic engineering from the University of Glasgow, Scotland. Jason, did I miss anything?
I think you pretty much got it covered, Cindy. Thank you.
Okay. Stephanie, also joining us is...
Hi, I'm Stephanie Mainwaring. I'm Product Marketing Manager at Bright Idea, and I'm sitting here with in the Financial District on the 25th floor overlooking the city, and we're very happy to be in this chat.
The questions for today, which, by the way, I used to post in the discussion section of Facebook, just to cover as many social media touch points as possible. However, Facebook is shutting down that feature. The questions for today can be found on a wiki, and the wiki is at productmanagementtalk.wikispaces.com, and you can see the October 24th questions. The first question for today is, what makes a product or feature innovative? John Newberry is calling in from the UK.
Personally, I think it's really, you know, solving a need that no one has identified or solved before. It
could also be delighting a user with functionality that's kind of unexpected. When you log into an application and get that wow factor, right, it's kind of something that you just didn't expect. So maybe solving problems in an elegant way. But I think most importantly is to do something first, take that technology and apply it in a completely different way that could also be considered innovative as well. So, you know, if I just kind of look around me, have the fingerprint scanner on my laptop, well, the first thing that appeared that was pretty innovative, although fingerprint scanners have been around for a long period of time.
One of the things that I'm looking for in the space of innovation is something that's creating new value for the customer and will also deliver value to the business. There's always a two-way value creation that comes from that innovative activity.
Yeah, and I think that raises a really good point. You know, I think on the face of it, a lot of ideas seem really that when you start, let's say I came up with an idea and said, okay, I want a solar powered car, well, it sounds like an awesome idea, and I think we would all click on the vote button for that one, right? But digging down it and whether it actually is a good idea and something that you should actually pursue, you know, and how much value really would it add to the end customer, then you need an awful lot of different inputs from people to make then a decision.
Mm.
Great. So I'd like to read some of the tweet answers. Larry McKeel, who is a regular participant. Hi, Larry. Innovation comes in many flavors, from the value, the product, the service. It helps to add a qualifier to what you are innovating. Kamel Tahir says, at a minimal level, innovation provides an improvement incremental to requirement-based product evolution.
Yeah, just going back to, I think it's McKeel, comment on, you know, the different flavors, and I totally agree with that. We see a lot of our clients, you know, looking for ways to innovate existing products, looking for ways to innovate on developing brand new products, but then also looking at things like how can they improve the processes within their organizations. So I think there's a lot of different ways that you can come at innovation.
And so Stephanie said it's about doing something first, something that creates value.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting point, because if you think about different ways that innovation could be measured, if you were really cynical, you could say that you could measure how much you were innovating by how much you were actually copied, right? And I think unless you're the person that actually does it first, it doesn't really, innovation is really just copying.
This first question is also complicated, a difficult one, because it is very broad, because it actually requires that you define innovation first, or what does it mean? So that's why we also thought.
Kamal Tahir says, realize before market uses buyers and a need exists, and it's not being met, so it's innovation versus evolution. It also depends on where in the life cycle you are with the product. Are you talking about innovating on a existing product or innovating within a market space? Stephanie says, initially many ideas sound good, but it often takes deeper insights, different perspectives to identify the innovative one. Tim Johnson has joined the Twitter chat. Welcome, Tim. Question two, how can product managers drive innovation inside their company?
So I think a lot of the best product managers, and certainly probably the vast majority of product managers, I think they're pretty controlling people, and they like to control everything about their products, right? They want to control the involvement and influence and everything that everybody can put on their products. And that's good in that they can have the control and things can be consistent. But I think product managers don't generally have all the answers, and they've really got to outside your comfort zone and really leverage all the inputs from the people around about them to help leverage those people to drive things forward. So I think it is getting people involved, let them know that their input's wanted and welcomed, and get them excited about the product, make it easy for get people involved from the areas that the people are passionate about, and then over time kind of keep those people kind of coming back, continuing to participate, collaborate with them, reward them for their participation. It doesn't need to be monetary necessarily. You can give them their 15 minutes of fame, you can give them points for voting on so on each idea that comes around, basically listening to them. Even if you don't like people's ideas and input, giving them the time of day, listen to what they say, think will go away a long way to continue to get input from people and help source those ideas, and that will ultimately end up in innovative new product and innovative enhancements to your existing product.
Larry says that product managers can drive product innovation by listening to customers, understanding their problems, and bringing them back to be solved. So I have to go back to your statement, which I did tweet out, Jason, about how product managers, well, I guess you didn't say we're control freaks, but that we do like to control as much as possible. Certainly the direction that the product is going, how it's positioned, it is up to us to determine in order to gain market share.
I think one of the other things that you need to do with product innovation as a product manager is sometimes forget your product, let it go, and go back to your customers and be prepared to come up with solutions that actually don't involve an incremental change of your product, but look at a step change that might actually leapfrog your product in a different direction.
So you're talking about listening to the market, getting a pulse?
Listening to the market about what their friction points might be, but sometimes that may not actually be solved. That may not be a direct change to an existing product. It may point in a direction you didn't expect, and I think the role of the product manager is to try and be brave enough to accept those and look at how you can develop solutions that will support them.
So what do you think the best ways of going about that are?
Otherwise, it's not really innovation.
I'm sorry, would you repeat that? I heard Jason ask, you were asking Nick about what the best ways of listening is?
Yeah, well, I was asking Nick, what do they think some of the best ways of listening to customers and getting that input actually are?
Okay. How would you approach it?
Well, I guess if I was to talk about some of the ways we do it in Bright Idea, we create what we call WebStorm. Kind of think about it like a marketing campaign. I think everybody's familiar with marketing campaigns, right? You run a marketing campaign, you put the messaging out there, and you get leads. And this WebStorms are pretty similar. You put this kind of campaign out there, but what you're hoping it will source is ideas. We leverage the wisdom of the crowd to vote on those ideas and comment on them and collaborate on them. And hopefully in that way, the best ideas, kind of, you know, they have the most comments that have been viewed and talked about the most. And so it makes it easier from a product manager's perspective to actually understand where the key pain points are and where the market really should head. And I think if back to Nick's point, you can really surface some things that you really hadn't thought about in the product and weren't in your roadmap at all that can really start impacting the customer base, right? Keeping your customers happy, retaining them, and building those kind of long-term lasting relationships.
Excellent. You're talking about using a tool to help product managers listen.
Yeah, exactly.
Question 3, where do you get ideas and inspiration for product innovation?
If I think about like the ideas that I come up with, I really draw it from all experiences that I have, all the conversations that I have, the customer complaints that I hear, how your hi-fi works, what the controls in your car are like, everything in daily life and your surface in the web and using different web applications. I think you gather somewhat subconsciously all of these data points, and then at some point you extrapolate those to kind of come up with an idea or a solution to an idea. I think that's how it worked for me personally, but when I'm trying to get ideas for my product, I definitely follow a different process, and it's something that we've actually processized in Bright Idea. We have a process both internally and a process externally that are actually somewhat similar, but we essentially crowdsource ideas. As I was saying earlier, we use the crowd to vote, comment, collaborate on the ideas in a sense of which are best. We try to move them forward. I think having ideas is just starting point, right? You really got to build a business case around them, especially for the enhancements where there's a large investment. You want to make sure you're doing the right thing, and you want to compare multiple ideas kind of side by side and evaluate them in the same way to really determine if you should spend your R&D budget on.
I got ideas are the starting point. You must build a business case around them and compare ideas. to validate and determine action. Nick actually has spoken previously on building business cases.
That's what we do, yes.
Yeah, what we were talking about is where we get inspiration from for a product, and then,
yep,
you know, how we kind of take them and decide which of the ideas are the good ones. And I was saying that, you know, we have this process whereby we source ideas both externally and internally to our company, and then we allow booking and collaboration on them, commenting on them, and through that, the best ones tend to bubble to the top. And to your point earlier, you can get a good feel for what the market's really thinking. You tend to surface a lot of things that weren't on your roadmap at all, and maybe sit up and rethink what you were, you know, what you're really planning to build. So
yep,
once we put that business case around them, we tend to evaluate them. We have scorecard templates. We can compare them side by side in a like manner and determine
right,
which
yep
ones they're going to build. You know? So that's you up to speed, Nick.
Cool. Well, I guess then sort of to follow on from what Cindy was asking, we have a sort of a four-stage business case building process where we start with probably similar to the scorecard idea, but the idea is really to size the potential of the idea in the marketplace, to look at the possible upside both, you know, for the value creation for the customer and the value creation for the business before you even bother thinking about can we actually do this.
Right.
Because I think one of the things that can kill an innovative idea is that at first blush it's too hard, or we've never done that before, or it's actually impossible. And it's the impossible ideas that actually create the innovative leap that we see day to day.
Is that a proprietary process that your company's come up with, Nick? Something that's evolved over time?
Exactly. It's basically, we've looked at the problem in terms of business cases where people are asked to, before they even start proposing an idea to the business, to work out how much it will cost and to have both the upside, the revenue potential, and also the cost fully baked before you start. And that just doesn't work in the real world. You don't know what you're going to build until you know why you want to build it. So we
right
separate those processes out. So you could call it proprietary, you could call it common sense, but whatever you prefer. If we can make common sense proprietary, then we'll be rich.
So one of our participants, Kamal Tahir, said that he's very familiar with Bright Idea tools. He's used them successfully at Nielsen in his former role, and he considers it an excellent product. It's okay if you planted that tweet.
We actually didn't, so I'm going to that one. I've definitely been frantically retweeting it.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm so thrilled.
It's interesting. Another participant, Robert Kelly, who is here today, runs a project management chat, which they kind of are standing on our shoulders and bringing this kind of professional discussion on Twitter to project management. He says that in his community, everyone is always plugging themselves. And I said, it's not a problem here. We're all focused on the issue at hand. I'm finding that product managers tend to be shy. We're very happy to promote our product and not ourselves. So welcome, Beta Boy, who retweeted, imagine impossible solutions to common problems. Ask what if we could solve them. Explore the results.
That was for me.
Yes, he was retweeting Nick's tweet. John Newbery, who's coming in from the UK, said that in answer to question 3, agree with the consensus. The inspiration can come from anywhere. Keeping up to date with the latest technologies helps. It also can be overwhelming. How do you manage all the ideas that are coming in? Nick suggested having the business case approach helps you identify which way to go. I know that Jason has his product, provides that, but also your product opens it up to a lot more ideas as well. If you include crowdsourcing into this inquiry, how do you manage the information being sourced from the crowd?
I tend to have a couple different kinds of duties. Sourcing for a short period of time, like maybe month ideas on an ongoing basis. And kind of the two processes are a little different. First one, in terms of volume, is not usually
such a big issue, but the second method, when it's kind of an ongoing thing, we typically see people allow ideas to come in and let them sit for a month, 2 weeks, a month, something like that, allow the crowd kind of vote on them, comment on them, and try and let that drive the visibility of the idea for us. And we also have some automatic triggers in the system. So, for example, if an idea was to come in and 100 people had it and nobody voted on it, it's probably not a very good idea, so the system could automatically archive it. And conversely, if an idea came in and it got viewed by 20 people and every one of them voted on it and commented on it, the chances are that that's probably a pretty good and interesting idea, so that can automatically be moved to a different status or be flagged to specific people to draw their attention to it. But some of these simple kind of rules-based functionalities can really help you process a high volume of ideas.
You're looking at the popularity of ideas. to give you information.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely not an exact science. It certainly gives you a good idea. I think also ideas that aren't necessarily high voted but are commented a lot on or somewhat controversial, maybe they get a lot of upvotes and a lot of downvotes, things like that are also worthwhile investigating. So probably just leveraging the wisdom of the crowd itself is not always enough. Things might fall through the crack. Personally, internally, when we get ideas for our product, I make a point of going through every single one of them every month, which definitely takes a long time, but for me, it's definitely worth it. I think there's still some nuggets in there that I would hate to lose.
Awesome. And that's actually how we run product camps. People will pose, here's a suggestion on what we should discuss today, and we all get our little sticky dots and we go vote on question four. Who should be involved in the product innovation process?
I think it depends on the stage that you're in, innovation process. I think initially, when you're trying to source ideas, I think basically anybody that cares should be involved, and that might be consultants in your organization, maybe partners, maybe customers, prospects, your marketing team, subject matter experts. When you decide that you think it's a good idea and you want to whittle it down from 300 good ideas down to 20 that you might want to work on or 10 that you might want to work on, I think that's a different set of people. You know, you probably want to have engineering involved. It depends on your products, obviously, but engineering, finance, business development people, subject matter experts, it's probably fewer people. You may want the idea submitter involved as well. And then when it moves on to actually executing on the idea, I think more project managers, engineering, product managers. So basically it depends on the phase of innovation that you're actually in.
For a new product idea, where you're listening might be different than if it's an incremental innovation.
Well, yeah, if it's for a new product, then it should be really, really broad. But if it's enhancing product, then it really has to be somebody that brought up, otherwise they don't really have the perspective to come. So I can guess, Cindy, what, depending on if it's a new product idea or an enhancing existing product, would the idea could really come from anywhere? If it's an enhanced and existing product, then you should intimately put their existing product by, I think they have.
The new product, the ideas can come from anywhere. An existing product, it certainly should come from the stakeholders.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just anyone. Stakeholders, I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe stakeholders is good enough. I'm just not sure that I would call a customer a stakeholder.
No.
I mean, maybe they are, but I don't know. First thought, it didn't sound quite right.
In my definition, I include customers as stakeholders because they're the ones who are paying for the innovation to some degree.
Okay, we can use the word stakeholder then, Cindy.
Okay, so we have to define it.
I just wrote that while ideas can come from anywhere, you have to look for innovation that will make a difference. And I think while you can sort of harvest ideas that can come from customer support and technology teams or business development, the product management focus needs to then distill those down and really analyze them and work them and go back to the marketplace and work out which things will create that innovative difference, that step change in customer behavior and interaction and, I guess, brand loyalty that you're looking for with product change. Ideas often end up being unintentionally small-sighted or short-sighted and relate to people's immediate pain points rather than looking and imagining how things might work in the future.
Kim Johnson said ideas for innovation come from a mindset of thinking, of looking for the novel, the undone, and the unfinished. John Newbery said that the problem is the same as need, or loosely defined terms. Maybe ask if there is a demand for a solution. Kamel Tahir said anyone with a stake in the need that is being solved, varying roles, though, like pigs and chicken and scrum, I guess he was responding to who are the stakeholders. John Newbery said, I'm not sure a problem has to exist. My iPad is an absolute innovation, but did it really solve a problem for me? He says, ... and I'll add on, or did it create new problems? Certainly created new opportunities. Robert Kelly says that fish are always left to know they're in the water. Get someone not so close to it involved. Again, we were in response to who should be involved in the product innovation process. Question five. Stephanie says the customers are stakeholders that sometimes or most of the time don't even know they have a stake until it's presented to them. Definitely, Stephanie, I agree. The customers are the last in the linear progression of who's touching the product. Question five is, how do you know if an idea is worth investing in? And Jason?
I've actually touched on a few of the things that we do here at Bright Idea around that, how people can vote and comment and you'll get that kind of input. But I think it's more than that. I think when I think of myself, I think you, as a product manager, you've talked to so many customers, you've talked to so many prospects, you've heard feedback from sales and marketing, and you tend to get a gut feel for what's going to work and what won't work and what will appeal to customers and whether customers are ready for it or
too far ahead, how much it's going to cost, and whether the return is actually worth it. So a lot of it is just data points that you gather along the way that you manage to extrapolate to make those decisions.
So you're saying you take data points to determine if it's worth investing in?
I think it also depends on the size and scope of the investment, but if it's something reasonably small, there's probably less rigor will go into determining whether or not you're going to do it right. If it's a large investment and something that you're potentially betting the company on, then there's a lot more due process around it. There has to be. You have to have a lot of buy-in from everybody in the company and make sure everybody's aligned behind it before you're trying to drive it forward. So I guess getting that consensus, that agreement, that would be an indicator as to whether or not it's worth investing in.
Larry says, have an independent methodology to weigh all the options available. Often stakeholders get attached to their idea. They focus only on the data points that prove their predetermined idea. Stephanie had said something about demand that John Newberry agrees with. Stephanie
right.
said customers are stakeholders. John Newberry had responded to Stephanie.
Yeah, John had the comment that he wasn't sure.
He said that demand, quote unquote, works for me.
Yeah. And that was because, he said people are not, he wasn't even sure if it required a problem as such, if there had to be a problem for any product to be developed. So I replied to him and said that both problem and need are terms that are rather loosely defined, and I suggested the word demand instead, because it is a new product is justified by the demand that it meets on the market.
Excellent. Larry continues, using a smaller data set and knowledgeable constituents, you arrive at a solution they are invested in seeing be a success. Do you agree with that, Jason?
I'm not sure it means about a smaller data. Do you think that's in relation to the data points that we were talking about? Maybe I'll just ask them that question.
Kamel Tahir says regarding Answer 5 and the ability to execute, if you can't do it well, grow capability, sell idea, but don't do it badly. How do you know if an idea is worth investing? He's saying it's worth investing also if you know that you can pull it off. Yes, but do you have guarantees? We're trying to set up as close as possible a guarantee that it's worthwhile. Is that simplifying it far too much? And you're asking Larry to elaborate on smaller data set. Nick said, if we can identify value creation, then we want to understand market size.
So it's kind of two steps in that process. Firstly, you need to know if there's at least one person out there who'd be willing to exchange some sort of value for solving a problem. If you can't find one person, then you really haven't found something that a market's going to be interested in. And if you can find one person, then the question is, can you find more? And are there enough people that solving that problem is actually going to be worthwhile for the business?
Excellent. Question 6, how do you prioritize product ideas?
It depends on, again, you know, the ideas for new products, is it enhancements to existing products? Certainly, that's always been the case for me in the area. I think an existing product, when they come through, typically supplemented from what is an internal versus external request. Is it marketable? Is it risky or invasive? Is it big effort? Is it small effort? Or is it an area you want to... All these factors can come together to allow me to get a ranking or a score, locate them on a roadmap. For new product investment is usually really high, right? And there's a much broader discussion. I think we've probably talked about that one a little bit already. You have to understand, will it make enough of a difference with your customers or with prospects that will actually purchase it? And how big a market opportunity is there? How much is it going to cost you? Is it aligned with your corporate strategy? Should you be changing your corporate strategy to follow it? And I think as customers with Nick and I kind of earlier on, I think using a process to determine a lot of that stuff is important. I think you want, if you have two product ideas, it's important that you're evaluating them and scorecarding them in the same way. So the business cases should be equally well formulated, and the questions, if you like, should be the same. They should be judged in the same way.
Robert Kelly says, just a project manager here, the standard business case portfolio method work for innovation? Would a separate, riskier budget work best? Robert was talking about how do you know if an idea is worth investing in? So he was looking from a project management orientation.
I think that's a really good point, because when we look at the type of activities, well, in terms of how to manage your internal risk, so there'll be some wild and crazy ideas that may actually have a very relatively low expectation of success. and they should make up a smaller part of your portfolio, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't explore them. Whereas other things that may be incremental improvements, whether we call them innovations or just improvements, would have a higher likelihood of returning a benefit, would probably make up more of your product portfolio and are more likely to return a benefit to the business. So managing a product portfolio of high risk and low risk opportunities, I think, is an important way to try and manage the innovation process within an organization.
Excellent.
And I think one of the things that I've just tweeted is that when we're looking at prioritization, the kind of the business case process that we use prioritizes market opportunities first. The business case process that we use prioritizes market opportunity first before we explore solution and feasibility, so that we don't throw out ideas that might seem impossible to begin with. And I think it's a really important part of our process to embrace the impossible until we know it's not.
So wouldn't you how we typically do things here is that would be part of we would evaluate all of those things together. So we kind of take the approach of putting together, it's almost like a proposal, or is a proposal on the ideas that we think are good, right? And that could include those things that you're talking about, but at the same time, we might also do technical feasibility study, right? But it's interesting that you would separate the two. Like, I haven't seen that been a major reason for throwing away ideas. I guess you've seen that a lot, though. What are the main industries you're working with
next? We actually work across a huge variety of industries. We've worked from medical devices to media companies to fashion and not-for-profit. And because we take that step of looking at the customer needs and the market needs first, we actually don't become encumbered with the technical side or the delivery elements of the product until we've understood what the market needs are.
It's probably a good point. It's probably a cheaper way to do stuff as well, right?
Well, that's right. If you find a market need out there, if you can articulate and prioritize it in terms of the overall opportunity of that market need, it puts a cap on what you can potentially spend on it to actually find a solution. So whatever needs to be feasible within the size of the overall opportunity you've identified.
Right.
So it really helps when you're delivering or creating a business case. Rather than working out how much will it cost and what am I prepared to spend, you look first at what opportunity might the market actually create here if we can solve this problem for them. And then can we find a solution in whatever format that may to actually address that solution within that opportunity size.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have, you know, for larger product ideas, new product ideas, we typically have like multi-round evaluation. So let's say you have effectively 100 ideas in the first round, and each round goes on, you kind of whittle it down. So I guess if I was thinking about implementing what you're talking about, then that first round would be kind of the market opportunity. So yeah, that would be an interesting way for us to implement it.
Mm. And the idea is to do it fast, to come up with as many ideas and to have a fairly loose approach to the actual numbers, but as long as you're sort of treating all of your numbers with the same level of effort, I guess.
Right.
The next step is, once you've sort of got a quick and dirty way of comparing potential ideas, then go into deeper validation of those ideas and those metrics once you've picked out the ones that really sort of rise to the top.
Right, great.
So unfortunately, on that note, Cindy, I'm going to have to drop off the call.
Okay.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Jason and Stephanie. It's great.
Nice to talk to you, Nick.
Thank you, Nick.
Bye-bye.
Regards to Adrian. Okay. Usually, Nick is not the co-host, but he is the expert in business opportunity. So I'm glad he could join us for that amount of time. And Larry McKeo, in the interim, had posted what the Kano method is, the Kano method. Thank you, Robert Kelly, for joining us also. Also, Larry said, saying no to a good idea gets harder the further you go along the process. Which of the three questions that we have left would you like to focus on? Anything that we didn't cover, although we've been asking leading questions.
I guess we could just go to the next one on the list.
I think we've been answering it also.
We kind of have. I mean, I kind of feel like we've answered all of them as we went on.
It will keep. So how can, Q7 we had was, how can product managers sell innovative ideas internally? Q8 was, how do you measure the innovativeness of your product? And Q9 was, will product co-creation with customers become the norm? So I think that Q9 is not something that we discuss very often in product management circles, so I would appreciate you speaking to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely something that will become more and more commonplace. I think there's a tremendous benefit in minimizing cost and increasing quality, customer retention, you know, getting your customers more invested, and I think also lead to better innovation. So saying it will become the norm, I don't know that I would go that far, but I think it definitely will become more and more commonplace.
We could do actually a separate interview that is just you talking about how product managers can use your tool and what your experience is.
That would be fantastic. I'd love to come back and do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So this was very interesting today. We had some newcomers, and I realized that if it's someone's first tweet chat, it's disorienting. It takes time to get used to how to read and think and type.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah, that's why I stay really quiet, because I've been so busy trying to read and type.
Yes.
I think halfway through you start to relax and are able to think.
Right. And, okay.
It's always really interesting. I think here's... it's not common that chat organizers publish their stats every time after the chat, so that's really great. I like it that you do that constantly.
Well, this is an innovative thing, and I feel like we are pushing the envelope. We have to educate people that Twitter could be used, and also manage the expectations on what you could get from Twitter. But it is certainly because the aspect of creating content by crowdsourcing on Twitter, and the fact that it potentially reaches a wider audience than would be available for a webinar. It's a different type of marketing around the knowledge and the content as opposed to around the event.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I'm inviting people to blog about this. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks.
Enjoyed this.
Sounds great, Cindy. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.